Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it. I'm excited about what's going to unfold here.
My pleasure. So talk to me a little bit about, first of all, what's the name of your company?
My company is the book writing business. You know, it's close to the end of the day. It's a Friday, and it's just kind of a
That's
I am Arlene Gale, and my business is the book writing business.
That's okay. And so how long have you been doing that, and what made you decide to launch this type of business?
Well, I've been combining my writing and marketing skills for about 30 years, and I've written hundreds of books and thousands of magazine articles and radio and television productions and advertising and programming. So I've been a writer pretty much all of my life, and I have written for everybody else and earned them millions of dollars, and I had nothing with my name on it. So about 3.5 years ago, I published my first book called Face Forward, Move Forward. And it's the story of my life. It's about growing up with abusive alcoholism in my family as a child And then the turning point is I'm 18, beaten for the last time, tossed out on my own. Now what do I do? You know? So the face forward is I want to live a different legacy. So I'm leaving that other legacy behind me. And the move forward is me and my journey and how I learned to live life 180 degrees different than anything I'd ever seen modeled. So it's tips and tools and tricks for overcoming negative self-talk, for learning how to not just dream, but create goals and plans to live your dreams. It's about drama killing. So it's all sorts of different tools that I've learned to implement in my life to be the person that I want to be and create a whole new legacy. And from there, I've got a couple people saying, hey, will you help me write my book? Like, well, okay, I like to do this. I can do that. So that's how the book writing business was born. About 3.5 years ago is what I specifically started concentrating on, helping people write personal or professional stories that are powerful and profitable.
And so that's kind of how I got going with my speaking business in the Women of Influence and that sort of thing, because, you know, I was doing all these speaking engagements and so many people were asking me, well, how did you get going and can you help me and that sort of thing. And so I created these opportunities for women to sort of get on stage. So I sort of get that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention and people
right.
were needed help. So I understand that. What issues, well, let me ask a different question. Because the writing industry has changed so much since I launched my first book back in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there were not a lot of people like yourself who were really helping writers to write their books. Or if there were, they were more like ghost writing, if
mm-hmm.
you will. That's not exactly what you do. Is that correct?
Well, I can do ghostwriting, and on the other end of that spectrum is writing coach. So basically, I help people develop a foundational marketing plan for why they're going to use the book, how they're going to use it to build business, outline the book, and then help them break it into little bite-sized pieces so that they can not only start writing the book they've dreamt about writing, but also finish it. A lot of my work is accountability and goal setting and troubleshooter, and then also just, you know, the coach that talks them off the edge of the cliff because they've gotten stuck. And then I do a kind of a combination of those, which is kind of a co-author, where we kind of work, I work not as much as a ghostwriter, but not as little as a coach. So there's a variety of different ways I work with people. It just kind of depends on what they need, where they are on their journey, because I don't have a connect the dots standard program for everybody. I very much give personalized one-on-one training. Even in my small group workshops, you're going to get your answers and you're going to write your book. You're just going to have somebody that's going to know how to help you do it.
Okay. So what are some common mistakes that you see that writers make? And before you answer that, I've got another question I want to throw at you. Are you, because it just sort of hit me, so you're a writer coach, and so you, accountability is, and goal setting is really important. Do you also
mm-hmm.
help them publish the book? Let's say they have a publisher, and but maybe they need help, or they need coaching.
Yeah. So, there goes one of your planes.
Yep.
Yeah, so I help.
Welcome.
I can run the whole gambit. Yes, it sounds like they're landing in your living room. So,
No.
But yes, I can. I help
year.
Them from the very every year. So I help them from the very beginning, wicketing and the writing, and then, you know, marketing and selling the books. You know, I've run bestseller campaigns. I've done them for my own books, and I know how to duplicate these results. But I also have part of my job, you know, it would be silly for me to help somebody write a manuscript and then go, hey, kid, that's a great manuscript. Now go away. Don't bother me. No, that's crazy. So I can help them publish. I can help them find publishers. I write proposals. I've got several clients that I've helped write proposals for that have gotten mainstream publishers. And that's one of the fallacies and biggest mistakes going on to your next question that people have is that you either go traditional publishing or you go self-publishing, and there are lots of choices in between. And so I help my clients navigate that minefield of publishing options. And I know what the pitfalls are and the pros and cons. And again, it depends on what each person wants to do and how they want to do it. And I can kind of navigate them through that.
Okay. So that sort of brings me to another question, and we'll get back to my original question in a minute. I love having these discussions because it's sort of you think you're going to go down one road, and then you're like, no, wait, I want to ask this question first. So when somebody comes to you, because I want the audience to sort of have a clearer understanding of what it is you do and how this works. Somebody mm-hmm. comes to you, you know, and they say, hey, Arlene, I want to write this book. I've got this publisher. You know, he's on my ass, and I just need to get this out. Can you help me, fine-tune it and get it ready for sale? Do you ever have a situation where you do all that, and then the writer comes to you and says the publisher hates the book?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I have people, you know, I'm also a content and continuity editor, and so I do that, and I do editing for marketability. And so I'll have a client come to me and say, you know, would you look at my manuscript, because I've had a couple people tell me that it's not very good, or it's not this, or it's not that, or it needs this. And, you know, I'll look at the manuscript, and then I'll call the author and say, hey, you know, you can't really publish a book where you've offended everybody in the target market in the first 30 pages. That's just, it's not going to sell, and it's not going to reflect well on you. I also look at it and say, okay, you know, the information you give in chapter 3 is contradicted in chapter 15 and then contradicted in chapter 25. So you have to figure out which one of these is right, or if all of them are right, then you need to clarify the scenario a little bit more clearly so that it doesn't look like you've lost your mind in between chapters. So it just kind of depends on where the writer is. And I work with clients who are at the very beginning of their business, so they don't really have a whole lot of branding, but they have a concept. And when we outline the book and really get very clear about how they want to use it, where they want to go with it, what they want to do, their target market, their competition, then we can back the branding and build the business from the book. And then the other end of this spectrum is people who have tons of content and they've already been in business for a while, but they don't know where to start. So it's about helping them figure out, okay, which baby are you going to publish first? You know, it's not about we're going to leave this or this or this behind. We just have to prioritize what's first, second, third, and fourth. So, and then I've got the people who come to me with a manuscript already written, and they're just needing to take it to another level because they're not getting very good feedback about it. And so I run the gamut. If it comes to writing, I can do it. If it comes to editing, I can do it. I've been doing it for 30 years, and I don't say that to brag, but it is my passion. You know, so I tell that to people, let me use my passion for the written word to help you live your passion and grow your passion for whatever your business is.
Okay, so that brings me back to one of my original questions, and that is, what are some common mistakes that writers make when they are they're writing the book, they're trying to get a publisher, they're trying to get a literary agent, you know, they're just trying to market it. What are some common mistakes that they make?
Well, the biggest mistake that I find that people who have already written and published books make is that they don't step back from the book before they start writing it and figure out, you know, I say there's three elements to a foundational marketing plan. The first one's about you, the writer. The next one's about your target market. And the third one is about your competition. And to go a little deeper into that, you know, the part that's about you, it's, why are you writing this book? What do you want to do with this book? Where do you want this book to take you, or you to take the book? Because until you understand that, you don't really understand, you don't have a clear view of what the content's going to be like. Because if you want to write this book because you want to be a speaker versus you want to be a coach, a one-on-one coach, or you want to do workshops, your content is going to change based on why are you writing the book and how do you want to use it. the next element to this plan is, who's your target market? And I get people, they kind of roll their eyes at me and go, yeah, yeah, Arlene, we know. Age, gender, demographics, all that demographic stuff. But it really goes much deeper than that. It's about, where do you find your target market? Because if you want to be a coach, you need to know where your people hang out, where your customers hang out. Where are they going to learn? Where are they going to find the information that you have to provide? And it's also about, how do you speak to them? For example, somebody my age may have, and I'm giving away my age. I was going to tell you, don't ask my age and we'll be fine. But now I'm going to tell you, if somebody my age were to talk to a millennial, I'm going to talk to them very differently based on the people they know, the things they know, the things that they're interested in, than I might talk to a, say, a 60-year-old or a 65-year-old who is trying to start a brand new career because they've been let go or downsized by a corporation. So your target market really is the demographic piece, but then also, where do you find them and how do you talk to them? And then the third big mistake is, most people publish a book and they don't know who their competition is. And you really have to have a good understanding of your marketplace and who your competition is, so that you can say, hey, I do this better, or I do this different, or I take what this person has already laid out and I take it two or three steps further. And if you don't understand the questions or the answers to those questions, it's really hard to write and publish a book that's going to also be sellable and usable as a business building credibility tool. And so that, I think, is that in a nutshell is what I find to be the biggest mistakes that most writers, whether they're new or already published, make.
I love it. Tell everybody where they can reach you, and feel free to make an offer if you want to make an offer.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you. So my business is Book Writing Business. So my website is bookwritingbusiness.com, bookwritingbusiness.com. And I've got, you know, speaking topics on there. I've got workshops on there. You can learn all about me and what I do and my services. You could send me an email, tell me you heard me on Tony's podcast, and let's set up a time to talk. My email is arlene@bookwritingbusiness.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or Facebook. I'd love for you to join me there, or Twitter. And on Twitter and Facebook, it's Arlene Gale, and that's A-R-L-E-N-E. And then Gale's a little tricky. It's G-A-L-E, G-A-L-E for Gale. I've got a YouTube channel where I've got tons of 1 to 1.5 minute videos on writing tips. I'd love to have you subscribe there. And I'm getting ready to do a new series of tips on publishers and publishing myths. I'd love to have you get those. If you go to my website, bookwritingbusiness.com, on the homepage, at the very bottom, I've got a little free book, a giveaway, that's 5 tips for writing your book. I'd love for you to download that, go through it, look at it. At the end, there's a call to action with a questionnaire, and that questionnaire comes to me, and it will give, the book is free, and then accessing me for a free coaching call to figure out, you know, what are you thinking about writing your book and how can I help you? And I'll give you that as a free gift. I'd love to connect with you. Don't wait to write your book because, you know, none of us are promised another tomorrow. So don't go in that grave with that book still in you.
I love it. Arlene Gale, thank you so much. Wonderful tips. Will you come back and talk to us again in the future?
Oh, I would love to, Tony. You just send me an invitation and I'll be at your beck and call.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much. Listen, hang out for a little bit if you can. We've got some other guests, and they may have some questions to ask you as well. Can you hang out for a little bit?
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you, Tony.
All right, hang on. We're going to take a quick commercial break because we've got bills to pay, and we will be right back.
Connection, love, and communication. We all have values for these words, but very few of us put them into practice. My name is Corey Johnson, and I'm a youth communication coach that works with teens and their families. You can learn more about me at CoreyJohnsonSpeaker.com. Now, no matter your age, profession, or experiences, all of us can remember a time where we felt connected, loved, and understood by our family members. At 17, I was told that I would be kicked out of my family home unless I changed. So, the next day, I signed up my family for family counseling. Yeah, my parents and my siblings, for a couple months of counseling, because I believe for me to change, we would all have to go back to understanding each other. My work with youth and their families is done through private coaching, workshops, and speaking engagements at local schools. If your child or someone you know's child is struggling with depression, communication, or expressing themselves, contact me at CoyJohnsonSpeaker.com. Now, if your child is worried about fitting into a social group, or if you personally are worried about connecting with your child or making sure they stay connected to you, contact me, CoyJohnsonSpeaker.com. That's CoHNSON Speaker, SPEAKER.com. Corey Johnson Speaker is how you can reach me. I look forward to connecting with you and servicing your family and helping out however I can, because all of us know what it felt like to feel loved, connected, and understood. Now, time that we start to feel like that every day. Peace and love. Take care.
Okay, and if you're just joining us and you hear a lot of noise in the background, I apologize. We have Blue Angels here. Once again, they're here every year, and sending out a shout-out to the Blue Angels for your service and for ruining my internet radio show. Thank you so much. We appreciate it every year. Now, seriously, they are here. They do a wonderful, wonderful performance. It just gets a little loud here when they're flying overhead, so just bear with us if you will. I appreciate that. My next guest is running for supervisor of District 6. I met her recently at a function here in the Tenderloin, and Christine Johnson, I believe you're on the line. Are you there? Welcome to the show. Christine, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. So I was saying that you and I met at a recent function here in the Tenderloin. And explain to people why you're running for supervisor.
Absolutely. And just so everyone knows, I'm also in the city. Actually, I don't think too far from where you are, Tony, so you all might hear the Blue Angels in the background, too. Fleet Week is one of my favorite traditions of the year, aside from Thanksgiving, so I'm really excited about it. So I'm Christine Johnson. I'm running for District 6 supervisor. I've been in the city for 14 years. I lived on Treasure Island for 8 years, and now I'm in Mission Bay with my husband and 2-year-old son. I have a background in public finance and land use, professionally in public finance. And with land use, I started in around 2006 or 7. I was appointed to the Hunters Point Shipyard Citizens Advisory Committee. And from there, I moved on to be chair of the Office of Community Investment and Infrastructure, which is the successor to redevelopment. And then for 4 years, I served in the Planning Commission. So all of that work means that I really understand how to get things done in the city. And I was perfectly content to continue my path of public service without being elected. But what I realized last year is that we have big changes that we need to make to build more housing, get better transit, make the city more affordable for everyone, and we're going to need public will to do that. And we're not going to have it if people feel like the city is not accountable for helping people who clearly need help on our streets, for making sure there are no needles on our streets and no poop, and if people feel like there's just no accountability and we're not able to provide basic services for residents. And I feel like we need more people on the Board of Supervisors who are policy oriented, who understand how to spend city resources appropriately, and frankly, know what they're talking about. And so that is why I've decided to run for this seat. I'm really excited to have the support of Mayor London Breed, a number of other electeds and community members. And I'm excited to run and excited to talk to you today. So thank you for having me again.
So here's my question, because, you know, we just had the announcement that Kavanaugh is going to be more than likely confirmed to the Supreme Court. Given all the chaos that we're seeing in Washington and in government in general, did that motivate you to run for supervisor?
You know, it's really interesting. I would say the national – I'm sort of watching the dumpster fire of the national politics like everybody else. And frankly, it really didn't drive me running at all, because local politics and local electeds impact your daily life so much more than chaos that you see going on in Washington, D.C. And I really wanted to run because what I was seeing every day on the streets is not working. You know, we have this juxtaposition of, you know, having this $11 billion overall budget, but yet we have the same per capita level of homelessness that we had 10 years ago. People are feeling pushed out every single day. There are needles and poop on the street. I have a 2.5-year-old, and the streets are a public health hazard. So that's what really drove me to run. Again, I'm watching the dumpster fire like everybody else, but that is not why I'm running for supervisor.
Well, so let me ask you this question, because every politician that I speak to, either on this show or just one-on-one, they kind of all say the same thing. It's like they want to see the streets cleaned up and the homelessness issue dealt with, and, you know, the needles and the shit that's on the street, and that's okay. What makes you different from every other politician?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, for me, it's about experience and vision. I'm able to back up what I'm saying with actual strategies and a history of working with folks in the city and having positions of leadership in some of these important issues. So I'll talk about cleaning the streets. You know, everyone's going to say that, you know, they want to see clean streets. But I was the only person running for office that actually pointed out that right now the city is actually not accountable for cleaning the streets. Private property owners are. That's what's in our admin code. So until we change that and then change how we administer our budget, we can talk all we want, but we're never going to actually be able to fix the problem. When we talk about housing, everyone's going to say, well, we need more housing. We need to make it more affordable. But people don't understand the way the inclusionary housing lottery system is set up is fundamentally inequitable and unfair. It doesn't work. It totally needs reform. And that there are very specific things that we can do to build more housing that's affordable to everyone. So what I bring that's different than other folks running for office is specific actionable policies. And you're not going to hear that from most people because most people don't come with the level of experience that I've had.
Okay. So let me throw an idea at you in a scenario. And keep in mind, this sort of hit me the other day, and I've spoken with a few people about this. One of the main issues that we run into here in San Francisco, and it just seems to have gotten progressively worse, is the homelessness. And, you know, we have to figure out how can we treat homeless individuals humanely. I got into a discussion with a buddy of mine the other day, and I said, listen, nobody wakes up one day and says, gee, I think I'll be homeless today. You know, that doesn't happen. I mean, life gets in the way and people give up and things, you know, shit happens. My question to you is, are there programs that are in place, or are you willing to talk to people about programs to help people who want to not be homeless anymore, get back on their feet? I'm not talking about general assistance. I'm talking about, you know, maybe there's someone out there who's wanted to start a business but didn't know how. You know, workshops, programs. The SBA doesn't really do that so much anymore, from what I understand, because I worked with them for a number of years. What can we do? What are your suggestions?
Thank you. That is a really fantastic question, and I'm glad we're talking about this on the Small Business Podcast. So, you know, I'm going to address your question. So we're going to sidestep for just a moment the issue of the actual roofs of our heads, because there's a lot of people talking about, like, the part about getting the most important part, which is getting people into a home to live in, right? So let's talk about self-sufficiency and getting people back on their feet. Those are, I have a lot of thoughts around this. The first one is we've actually seen some success with formerly homeless individuals getting work with DPW, and some of them are manning pit stops, which are basically mobile bathrooms, and have given me, really great accounts of their success in getting off the streets and getting back to being stable. And that is not general assistance. That is a job. So there are lots of opportunities like that that we can have in the city, particularly since we are talking about spending more resources on basic city services, like keeping our streets clean. So that's one opportunity. I've also been spending quite a bit of time, not just in running for office, but beforehand, on how to promote entrepreneurship in San Francisco. The headline for San Francisco is talking about the tech companies and people who are software engineers or maybe opening a restaurant or something. But there's an untapped opportunity for micro-entrepreneurship that we really should be building up. And this is going to require, sometimes it might be a little bit of a zoning change to be able to allow more easily people to be able to run businesses out of where they live, which is what happens when you're a micro-entrepreneur. But it's also going to be about city support to get started, whether your business is selling something in arts and culture or whether it's a service or it's a product. We should be able to get people on their feet. The Office of Economic and Workforce Development right now sponsors over 32 programs that are designed to help entrepreneurs start small businesses or maintain them. But most people don't know about them. So this doesn't make the top three things when I tell people why I'm running for office, but I'm also committed to success of entrepreneurs and small businesses in San Francisco. And one of the first things that I want to do is make sure that we are properly publicizing the programs that we already have. These are things that can help you whether you have a storefront and you just want to spruce it up, which is the SF Shines program, or whether you need a microloan, or whether you need some other sort of assistance. We have those programs in San Francisco, and I want to make sure people know about them, and especially for folks who are just getting started, who are just getting stable, this is an opportunity for them to create income for themselves, right? So that, you know, we're not just talking about people being on general relief for a long period of time.
Yeah, that is a program that I'm talking. We had Angie Williams, who's running for District 1 in Virginia. She was on my show a few weeks ago, and that was one of the programs that I was talking to her about, because as bad as it is here in San Francisco, apparently it's worse where she is. And so one of the programs, one of the ideas that I came up with is, listen, what if you have a series of workshops to teach people who are ready to transition from homeless and you know, maybe they have a roof over their head, but they're looking for a way to generate revenue. Why not teach them how to start a business? What, you know, give them the skills that they need in order to start their business, grow their business, whatever. You know, that can be transformational. And I just don't see a lot of people talking about that, and it's really sort of discouraging for me. So.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I would say, I'm sorry, I totally interrupted you. I apologize. And I love your two cents. I love your two cents, and I would say, you know, you're right. There are people who have spoken a lot about jobs. Like, I actually do hear much more about people moving beyond, again, the roof over their head to talking about, you know, work opportunities and other opportunities to integrate, you know, a little bit more with community. But certainly the entrepreneurship side is lacking, right, in talking about this population, and I'm focused on it, and I have some ideas, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, and this will be the last thing I say before I let you go, but my sense is a lot of times people will start a program. They will, if they know where to look, if the information is presented to them, if you give them the encouragement, they will actually take advantage of those programs and utilize them if they're in front of them or if they know where to find them. And I think that's part of the issue, is that the programs that are out there, people don't know where to look. They don't know where to get started. They feel overwhelmed. And so it's sort of – and then once you get there, it's so disheartening to get started. You know, you got to jump through all sorts of hoops just to get started. I would welcome the opportunity to have a discussion with anyone from the city about how we can make this a little bit easier for people who are ready to change their lives. So there you have it. That's my 5 cents, if you will. Tell everyone in one sentence or 30 seconds why they should vote for you and tell them where they can locate you.
Oh, excellent. So I want everyone to come out and vote. Local politics, local electeds impact your life much more than what you see on CNN or MSNBC or any of these other channels. I want to be the next District 6 supervisor because I have the background, I have the strategies to turn around this district and improve our quality of life. We cannot move on to the bigger things if we cannot take care of those who are on our streets, if we can't keep our streets clean and safe, and if we can't make this city more affordable and accessible. We are never going to be able to become a 21st century city. I've spent my career and in my personal time on this topic for 14 years. I have the policies and the strategies to move us forward from the last 8 years of failure, and I'm hoping to get everybody's support. I'm accessible. My campaign office is at 76th Street, so that's 6th and Jesse, so I'm right in the center of the city, in center of the district. My email is christine4dsixsupervisor@gmail.com. If you email me, you will get a response. I can also be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I'm really responsive to all of those outlets. So if people have questions, if they want to volunteer, if they want to give, or if they just want to share it with their friends, my message, I'm always accessible for that. And Tony, thank you so much for your time.
Well, I appreciate it. And listen, if you can hold on a little bit, we do have another guest coming on, but we might have some people that might have some questions. If you can hang out a little bit, or do you have to go?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I can hang out.
All right. Sounds good. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to go pay some bills and go to commercial, and we will be right back.
Most of us experience 200 chemicals before we get to the breakfast table. Want to kick chemicals to the curb? Start with the largest organ of your body, your skin. From the banks of the Rogue River in Michigan, Flow Soap Studio has created a chemical-free soap that your body will love. Our soap is made with botanical oils, natural colors, and scented with pure essential oils. It's vegan and never tested on animals. That means no tallow from large factory slaughterhouses, no GMO oils, detergents, perfumes, or harsh sulfates. Not a single ingredient is created in a laboratory, so it's safe for the environment and amazing for your skin. Find us on Facebook at Flow Soap Studio or visit flowsoapstudio.com today and get free shipping. That's Flow, F-L-O-W, soapstudio.com.
Okay, and we are back. Christine Johnson is on hold, and we're going to bring on our next guest, Kevin Murphy, who is first time to the show. And, Kevin, I know you are there. I think you're there. Kevin, are you there? Welcome to the show.
Yes, I am, Tony. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. Thank you so much for calling in. And I should mention that Kevin is the author of a rather interesting book. It's The Three Rooms, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. I want to welcome you to the show. And I'm a little curious. I haven't had a chance to read the book, but I did read your background. You were on Wall Street for a good portion of your career, and then you decided that you were going to become a writer. What made you decide to change careers, and what was the impetus for getting out there and doing that?
Well, it actually wasn't a conscious decision. You know, I spent 33 years with one firm on Wall Street, and you know, it's probably about 5 years ago. This would have been a very unlikely conversation we'd be having. But I literally just started getting a premonition that I was going to write a book, and I didn't know what it was about. And then, you know, I started getting this image of three doors. You know, one was labeled the past, and one was labeled the present, and one was labeled the future. And eventually, you know, I just started writing, and the three doors became the three rooms because I kept writing about the place our thoughts go behind each door. And was probably what was most interesting is I ended up writing down 10 chapters, and that was about, you know, maybe after about 3 years, I just kept filling in those chapters. And it could have been ideas coming from, you know, books I've read or songs or just life experiences. And I kept filling them in. And after, let's say, another 3 years, all the chapters were filled in and they never changed. And then I realized it was time to step away and get the book published. So it wasn't quite a conscious decision, but it was something that, you know, is more kind of driven to do.
You know, you mentioned premonition, that you're going to write a book, and I don't really talk about this too often, but I get premonitions as well. So I absolutely understand what you're talking about and how powerful that can be. One of the things that you talk about in your book, and you might have heard that we had Arlene Gale, who helps writers write their books and tell their stories as well. She was on the show earlier. But one of the things that you write about is that we typically live in three separate rooms, the past, the present, and the future. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that means and how that's relevant to living our everyday lives?
Sure. You know, and I think it's, you know, the premise of the book is that our experience of life is not based on what we do for a living or what we have, our possessions. You know, it's based on what we think. And our thoughts can only be in one of three places. They can be in the past, or what I call the past room. They can be in the future, or the future room. Or they can be in the present, or the present room. And whichever room your thoughts are in determines your experience of life in that moment. Because, of course, our thoughts can go back and forth to the past and the future, and that's okay. But the key is to know which room your thoughts are in or where they are. And in order to do that, you need to observe your thoughts. And it is that act of observation that separates our awareness from our thoughts. So we're no longer at the effect of them. And that awareness is that consciousness or that divine consciousness that all the mystics have always talked about. That's what we want to tap into all the time. So it's all about awareness.
So is there a right way, because it would be really difficult I would imagine, to do that. I don't know because I've never practiced this. Because our past defines our present and our future. So how do we utilize your teachings to really have the outcome and live our best lives? Because what I understand, if I understand it correctly, you're saying that we should always live in one of those rooms, one at a time. Does that sound about right?
Well, the place we want to be is clearly in the present room, and that's where we align with this consciousness, this universal consciousness. And so you can say that we're defined by our past, but we don't have to be defined by our past. What if your past is there's things that you don't like from your past? And then why does that have to define your future? And it really doesn't. We allow it to define our future. And so the past room is when you're looking into the past and you're thinking about things that cause negative emotions. You're thinking about something that someone said to you. You know, you're feeling anger or resentment, or you're feeling guilt about something that you did. When you constantly go back there and feel negative emotions, that's not helping. And that's different from looking back and learning from the past. Just like in the future, people say, well, you have to think to the future. You have to plan for the future. But looking to the future and worrying about things and feeling stress and anxiety about different things in the future, that's being stuck in the future room. That is not planning for the future. But we can learn from the past by being aware right now that we're looking back at things that we, you know, to learn lessons and remember things that we did or to recall positive past experiences. That's all fine, and we're doing it right now. Or from the present, if we want to look into the future, we can imagine the future that we want, and we can start to visualize that. That's what all great visionaries have always done, and that's fine. You know, when you have a business, you have a small business, you're thinking about things in the future, you know, about how you can do things better and where you want your company to be. That's a lot different than waking up every day and worrying about different things and stressing about them, because those negative emotions constantly tell us we're not looking at things the right way. And ultimately, it comes back to those emotions.
Okay. So it sounds to me as if what you're saying is it's okay to live, to live in one of those three rooms so long as it's a positive experience. So long as you're thinking about the future and how you want to build your business, the present, you know, and what's happening right now, right in front of you, or the past, so long as it's a, you're not dwelling on the bad stuff, you're thinking of good memories. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, so another way to look at it is just, how do you feel? And, you know, it's so hard to be monitoring your thoughts all the time. We have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. To be saying, okay, which room is this thought in? Which room is this thought in? It's not about driving yourself crazy about where you're thinking and where you're going. It's how do you feel? And how we feel, our thoughts have the biggest impact on how we feel. So, but everything is about, you want to, you know, the tagline for the book is change your thoughts, change your life. It really should be change your emotions or how you feel and you change your life. But our thoughts have the biggest effect on it. And so it's always about how you feel, and that lets you know. If you're feeling anger or resentment or bitterness, you know you're thinking about something in the past that you shouldn't be thinking about, or you're looking at it the wrong way. If you're feeling stress or anxiety, you're thinking about something in the future that you're thinking about the worst-case scenario. But if you're feeling good, any kind of positive emotions of appreciation or gratitude or compassion or anything, of joy and happiness, all those things are happening right now. Now you know you're in the right place. So you can go look back into the past from that place. That's your connection to your own soul. And whenever you're not feeling positive emotions or love-based emotions, if you will, you just know that you're perceiving something differently than the way your own soul perceives it. And that's why we always want to come back in. That's where we're centered.
So here's what I want to do. I want to open up the lines and see if any of our other callers have anything that they want to add on. I know that, Arlene, I know you've got to go in a few minutes, and you are writing yourself. I know you're on the line as well. Arlene, do you have anything that you want to add to what Kevin was saying in terms of having his living in the present, that sort of thing?
You broke up a little bit there, but I absolutely 100% agree with Kevin that your past does not have to define your future. You know, I'm a perfect living example of that. Having grown up with a multiple generational legacy of abusive alcoholism that, you know, tortured everybody in my family, and, you know, making a conscious decision to do something different. So, you know, that's the good news, is your past does not have to define the future. It is your choice. And so people who have a powerful story like that to tell that can inspire the world, that they have those little nuggets of information and outlooks, like Kevin was saying, about the rooms and how he presents that, you know, books are so powerful in helping people change the way they think about and approach life. And so I would just, you know, recommend people, you know, get Kevin's book, get my book, Face Forward, Move Forward. My newest book that just came out is Book Business Blueprint, and it's all about writing your book. So if you got a story, whether it's personal or professional, again, let's get it written. Let's work together. Contact me.
And I want to throw something at Christine, because something sort of hit me. We were talking about premonitions, and we're all, or I know three of us on that I've interviewed today are writers. Christine, I, for some reason, I had a vision just a minute ago of you writing a book on women in politics. And I don't know why. I don't know if that is of interest to you, but I see you writing it.
Okay. Especially if I win, I totally will.
I think you have something that you can certainly bring, and particularly women of color in politics. I think that would So here's what I want to ask. Kevin, and by the way, if you all have any questions that you want to ask any of our guests, you know, feel free to ask. This is sort of the portion of the show where it's more of a free-for-all and free-flowing and that sort of thing. So, Kevin, here's what I want to ask you, because, you know, there are times where I use my anger over my past to accomplish everything. One of the questions I often get as a speaker is, how do you accomplish everything that you accomplish? And my answer is, I'm always pissed off. I'm always pissed off about something. And so I tend to use that. So you're saying that what I should do is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're saying what I should do is rather than drawing on the negative past experiences, I should draw on the positive. Does that sound about right?
Yes, it does. But, you know, I guess what you're really saying, you're saying you're driven by anger. But maybe when you think about things and you kind of take that, what you've learned to do is take that anger and really allow that to enable you to focus better. And then you focus on things and you get things done. So everything is about focus or paying attention. And you really do want to focus. I wouldn't encourage people to focus on anger, because the longer you focus on a negative energy, the more you feel it. And there's scientific reasons for that and everything else, where you can, you know, feel more and more anger, or you can feel more and more stress. And sometimes you hold on to things too long. You said think about negative things, and eventually that anger turns to hate, and, you know, good things don't come from that. But if you can channel something, if you can, you know, find something that maybe that you weren't happy about or you didn't do well and that made you angry, and now you can channel that and really focus on something to accomplish things in the future, then that seems fine. I just wouldn't be careful about hanging on to the anger too long and shift it more to focus and paying attention.
I love that. Okay, so here's what I want to do. I would love for each of you, because I know that that Christine, you've got to go, and Arlene, you've got to go as well. I would love it if each of you could tell us or tell the audience what your one takeaway is from this interview. If people are tuning in either now or later on, 5 years from now, whatever, what's the one thing that you want them to get from this interview and from working, whether you're in politics or a writer or whatever? What's the one thing? Oh, sorry.
Who do you want to start with?
Kevin, I want to start with you. Right.
Okay, so this is Kevin. I would say the one message that I would have is that we do have control over how we feel. Everybody does, and it all depends on whether we let what we see and hear in the physical world determine how we feel inside, or whether we start with how we feel inside and we let that determine everything we see and hear. And that's the key. From the first thing in the morning when you wake up, whether it's through meditation or whatever it is that you can, the absence of thoughts, where you can start to feel good and think positive thoughts, and you hold on to those all during the day, your experience of that day completely changes. And so you are in control of your day instead of letting everything else control how you feel.
Okay, I love that. Tell everybody where they can get copies of your books, or if they want to work with you, or if you want to make an offer, feel free to share that as well.
Sure. It's just, you know, the book, The Three Rooms, is available on Amazon, and my website is just thethreerooms.com, and it's the T-H-R-E-E rooms.com. And you can find all the information on there, and there's a lot of other information about the book and different blogs and stories.
All right. Sounds good. And we're going to go to Chris. Actually, let's go to Arlene, because I know, Arlene, you've got to go in a minute. But what's your one take?
Right. Well, publishers' research show that 325 million people say that they want to write a book,
and 1 million books were published last year. Now, that's astonishing and amazing, a terrifying number. But the fact of the matter is that's less than 0.1% of people who say they want to write a book who actually do. So, it, you know, you may feel like you don't have the skill or the talent or the time or the patience or the this or the that. All of those reasons or excuses that hold you back from living that dream in your life of writing your story, again, whether it's a personal story or a professional story, all of those things in your mind, I will acknowledge, may feel completely 100% real, but I will tell you, as the book writing business coach, those are not insurmountable obstacles. Those can be overcome, and that's my job. What I do and what I have a passion for is to take all of those things, those fears, those stumbling blocks, and say, hey, I know how to do this. I've written 8 books for myself, hundreds for other people. I can help you do this too. So if you want to write a book, please don't keep waiting, because again, you know, get that story out of you now. Don't wait till it's too late. Your family, your friends, the world deserves to hear your story. So connect with me, please, at bookwritingbusiness.com. And remember, you can be that 0.1%, one of the million, and I can help you write a book that's powerful and profitable.
I love it. And Christine, we're going to go to you, and Arlene can probably help you write that book.
I love to. And you know what, Christine, even, you know, I hope and pray that you win this election, but you know, there's value in learning, and there's a lot of women coming up behind us that can learn from us and how, and the things that we learn that we can share. So yeah, girl, let's do it.
And let me throw this at you, Christine, because worst case scenario, if for whatever reason, God forbid, you do not win, you know, you still have a story to tell, and I think other women want to hear it.
Okay. Well, I'm still going for the win on November 6th, so I'm going to focus on that. But to your question, I've learned a lot in this past year. But to your question of, one takeaway, you know, I think the biggest thing is to say, you know, again, we're seeing dumpster fires at the national level with our politics and with our elected leaders. But local office holders can impact your life way more. And I would really encourage everyone to look around them, get involved, see what organizations are down the street, you know, watch a Board of Supervisors hearing online every once in a while, like understand how your city works. And I think if we had more engagement, we would see a lot more change faster. But I'm excited to be at the vanguard of that by running for office, and I'm hoping everybody hears my message and I end up being the next District 6 supervisor, which would, by the way, make that book that much more exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And let me tell you something. You said something that really sort of resonated with me. You said, find out how your local government works. And I think that's so important, particularly now. I think we need to really engage and really educate ourselves to really find out what's going on a local level so that we can make change on a global level. So I think that's really important, and thank you for saying that. So there you have it. So I want to thank all of you for joining us. Christine, people can locate you at christineforsupervisor.com, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct, and the 4 is F-O-R.
All right, that sounds good. I want to thank each of you for joining us, and we will be promoting this so that people can tune in after we're off the air. And this was a wonderful, wonderful engagement. I hope you all got out of it. Kevin, I want to invite you to come back on the show and talk to us again if you like.
Thank you very much. I'd very much enjoy that. And I will echo just last what Arlene said, because the fact that I wrote this book for the first time, I can't tell you how many people have told me, you know, I want to write a book too. You know what? That's something I want to do. So Arlene was right on the money. There's so many people that have a book in them or have a story to tell. They haven't been telling him, so I'd say reach out to Arlene. That's, you know, she's right on point. You know, you have a story to tell, tell it. It's a wonderful thing once you get it out.
Thank you. Everybody has a story to tell, and you know sometimes you need help telling it. So that's the reason why we have people like Marlene who are there. So thank you all for coming on the show. That's our show. We're gonna take a quick commercial break, and then meantime, all of our guests, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Wonderful weekend. Happy Fleet Week.
Christine.
This is Inez, your audacious living and confidence coach with InezBracy.com. Can you feel the change in the air? The change that's telling you that it's time for you to do something different with your life? Time to have the transformation to start living your dreams the way you desire? This transformation is all about you. Do you sometimes feel that you don't matter because you're not doing the things that your soul and your heart is crying out for? Then if this is you, it is time to take action. It is time to take action to get clear about your future, to get some strategies to assist you in having the dream lifestyle that you desire. And it's time for you to feel the accomplishment that feels so good when you know you're really on your path. Connect with me at InezBracy.com. Click on my calendar and schedule your time to chat with me. I know that you are desiring a change and you'd like a little help. You just don't know how to get there. Be sure to schedule at InezBracy.com, schedule on my calendar, so that you will have the chat to get you started on creating that life that you know you deserve, desire, and definitely want. I am Inez, your audacious living and confidence coach.
How would you feel if each of us came with a manual, not a how-to manual, but a who-are-you manual? Think about this for a minute. In other words, what would it mean to you to be able to understand your child's behaviors? Hi, my name is Paige Olson. As I grew up, I felt misunderstood, and I didn't even understand myself. Over 30 years ago, I started riding and working with horses. Early on, I started to see their behaviors communicating their unique individual personalities as well as their emotional well-being in the moment. At the birth of my first child over 25 years ago, I made him one promise, to seek to understand him first. I made the same promise to my other child at her birth. Seeking to understand the messages in their behaviors created the foundation for our parent-child relationships that allowed each child to give me permission to raise them. Using a combination of intuitive gifts, investigative skills, and astute behavior observations to see what parents did not yet see, I have spent the last 20-plus years mentoring children as well as their parents, transforming their parent-child relationship. It is in our behaviors where we find the messages that are the foundation for the manual that was never written. If you have children between the ages of birth and five, if you're willing to slow down, if you're open to new perspectives, if you're ready to make observations and ask questions starting with, why is my child, not how can I get my child to, I can help you discover your child's unique individual biological wiring, the greatest gift you can pass on to your child as they grow up. A good place to start is to really understand you. Your one half of this relationship and your past experiences and beliefs matter. If you have children under the age of five, here's your first step. Go to my website, TheOlsonMethod.com. That's Olson, as in O-L-S-O-N. Take the parenting struggle assessment and do the core beliefs exercise. As you do these exercises, write down your answers so you can look over them later and become conscientiously aware of your actions, beliefs, and behaviors. If you'd like a free 30-minute conversation with me to discuss the most frustrating or stressful behavior you're experiencing from your child, go to the contact area of my website, TheOlsonMethod.com, and send me a request for a free Discover Your Child conversation. I look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Startup Founders, are you looking for resources, space, mentors, service providers? Visit us.techcode.com. Is your company growing and are you ready to access new markets? Overseas, China, Europe, North America, visit us.techcode.com. Are you a mentor or service provider that are interested in access to startups in incubators or accelerators throughout the world? Visit us.techcode.com.
Okay, and that is our show for this week. I want to thank all of our guests and our listeners for tuning in. This is a lot of fun, as always. We will be back on the air in November, if I'm not mistaken. I will be traveling, and I've got some other projects that are underway as well. So be sure to tune in, listen to the best of, and to hear some of our past shows, and support the show. If you do want to be a guest on the show, or if you do want to advertise with us, make sure that you you contact us, and we're certainly happy to talk to you and talk to you about rates and that sort of thing. We've got one more ad that I want to play before we sign off.
Planning an event can be difficult. With all the choices, it can be overwhelming. Do you use a big, expensive hotel conference center? Do you use an eating establishment that doesn't have the equipment you need on site to make your event successful? Are you on a tight budget? Then the space you're looking for is MeetingSpaceForYou.com for the Beacon Center, Las Vegas' premier meeting and conference center. At the Beacon Center, we have a simple put-it-back-the-way-you-found-it structure that will save you money on your next event. At the Beacon Center, we have over 1,300 square feet of space that makes it perfect for your next business presentation. Presentation, family gathering, wedding and reception, conference, seminar, bridal or baby showers, anytime you need the space, we have it. But at the Beacon Center, we are more than just space. We have comfortable padded chairs, a 65-inch high-resolution television, high-speed Wi-Fi, and so much more, making the Beacon Center the perfect place for your next event. Book your next event today at MeetingSpaceForYou.com. That's MeetingSpaceForYou.com for the Beacon Center, just minutes from the Strip. The Beacon Center, the space you're looking for.
Okay, and that is our show. And so here's my final thought, because this has been a really, really, really stressful week for a lot of us, particularly given the Kavanaugh hearings and the nomination and that sort of thing. Listen, November is coming up, midterms. If you're not out there voting, and making your voices heard, and you've got no room to bitch. So I want everybody to get out there and vote. Early voting begins here in California next week, if I'm not mistaken. That's October the 8th. So, and last day to register to vote is October 22nd here in California. So if you're not registered, please register. If you haven't voted, or you just haven't had an interest in voting, please make sure that you do so, because it is so important. We, you know, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, everybody needs to have their voices heard. So with that, I played this the last time I was on the air, and it got such a great response. I'm going to go out with a little bit of Chaka Khan, Never Miss the Water, because I think it's pretty apropos. Take care and see you next time.